Welcome, everybody, to our March call. I'm Madeline Pera. I'm Citizens Climate Lobby's Vice President of Programs. And Mark Reynolds asked me to host the call. He was scheduled to be off today. I'm still hosting the call, even though his plans have changed and you can actually see him. Our guest speaker is Hannah Picard, and I'll be introducing her in just a minute. But I do like to tell you, Hannah, and all our speakers, about the people that you're going to be speaking with. So here's what I'd like you to know about us, Hannah. These are the most productive climate advocates you'll ever speak with. They file field reports for the actions they take, which include things like writing letters to the editor, making presentations, meeting with their members of Congress. And last year, they filed 139,581 field reports. They're also the most effective. This is the group that got the first bipartisan carbon pricing legislation introduced in Congress in a decade. And they're extremely resilient people. Many of them, as you can tell, are calling in individually today and holding their chapter meetings on Zoom instead of in person. And they petitioned us to get a Zoom meeting with greater capacity this month so that they could stay engaged. So now about Hannah. Hannah Picard is our speaker, and she trains people in proven communications techniques. That didn't roll off the tongue. Improving communications techniques that shift the national conversation about climate change to be more positive, civic-minded, and solutions-focused. She is the network manager for the National Network for Ocean and Climate Change Interpretation. The short name for that is NOCI. And they currently support climate communicators in 184 institutions in 38 states. Whether we're presenting in person or online, I think Hannah's coaching is going to help us to inspire audiences towards taking action and being part of the solution. And Hannah, I just want to thank you again for being on. I know that you and your colleagues are also going through lots of disruption right now, and we're really glad to have you and wish them the best of all the zoos and places that as they figure things out too. So welcome. So you work for the National Network for Ocean and Climate Change Interpretation, and for nearly 10 years, NOCI has connected many people in zoos, aquariums, and parks around the U.S. Just how many is that?
So, like you said, that's 180. We're a community right now of about 184 institutions, and that's growing in 38 states. And our combined audiences, if you add the visitor attendance for many of them, and is upwards of 200 million people a year. So we're really focused on helping those institutions model and connect with their visitors so that hopeful and solutions-focused and civic-minded climate conversations become the norm in our country.
Wow, yeah. So say a little more about what exactly is NOCI.
Yeah.
I'm sure we just heard of it today.
Yeah, NOCI, we like to eat pasta, but our mission is to change the national discourse on climate and ocean change to be positive, civic-minded, and solutions-focused. So we commissioned research and trained staff in evidence-based communication methods at informal science centers, so zoos, aquariums, the national parks, places, and academic institutions, places that have the trust of the American public and also the broad reach to help us accomplish this national goal that we have. And together, our community supports each other in many different ways to be better climate communicators. So we might help each other build new programs or edit our communications. We train each other, and we train allies, like, you know, me showing up on today's call. But we also provide the emotional support that we need, because thinking and talking about climate change all the time is mentally very difficult sometimes. And being part of an active community is necessary to support the work we're all doing. I'm sure folks on this call can feel that way too, and that's why they're part of this group. And so together, kind of, we make each other stronger, and our research has shown that visitors to institutions with NOCI-trained staff are more likely to encounter climate change information, they express hope and confidence about their ability to talk about climate change, which is key to our changing national discourse. They believe that talking with friends and family and their civic leaders is an effective use of their time and effective in making change. They actually talk with others about climate change and they engage in more civic actions, which is key. So that's the lowdown on us really quickly.
Wow, that's a big program and that's really wonderful. So what advice do you have for those of us who want to be better climate change communicators?
So my number one advice is to ditch the gloom and doom. And it feels hard because doom and gloom and this crisis messaging has been the go-to method in environmental communications for decades. It's also been the like default way we communicate urgency. But it's not working. It hasn't worked. We're in the state where we are because it's not working. And it's proven to cause disengagement in long-term action. So it might work for a very quick action, but long-term support, it actually declines long-term support. And that's a problem for us because climate change action is a marathon and not a sprint. And we're also seeing now that it is causing a rise in the mental health challenges and risks associated with climate change. But the good news is there is a way to promote urgency and long-term action, and it's to cue hope as the kind of emotion. And we've seen it over the decade that we've been around that when we model and teach hopeful communication, civic action increases around us, but we're also seeing it pop up in the climate literature that's coming out now from the Yale Project for Climate Communication. So they, and this book gives me so much hope, we know from them that hopeful Americans are more likely to talk with their friends and family, support transitions to renewable sources of energy, and act civically for change. Awesome. Americans who talk about climate change with their friends and family are more likely to see climate change as a risk and support policies to reduce it. So we need to get them hopeful so that they start talking. And then we're also starting to see that because family and friends are trusted messengers, that when family and friends start talking more about climate, that leads to more people learning and accepting the climate science, which then leads to more conversation, which is that really cool loop that we need. And then the more talking that's happening, that's building public discourse builds social cohesion. And we're seeing that social cohesion is the key to building resilience to the physical and the mental impacts, mental health impacts of climate change. So when I think about our role as climate communicators, it is our responsibility to be spreading climate hope and really working hard on that and not crisis and doom and scariness and the apocalypse.
I think that resonates with us quite a lot and with our current situation too. So thank you. You train zoo and aquarium educators in how to make a case for why it matters to act on climate change. But how do you communicate with a really diverse audience, you know, about climate change, knowing that people don't care about the same things for the same reasons? How do they do that?
Yeah, so that's kind of the challenge we started out with, because if you can imagine coming to the aquarium and encountering, you know, a volunteer or a staff member on the floor, your interaction with them is really brief. Most of the time, it's not more than 2 or 3 minutes. And so we wanted to make sure that to increase the kind of conversations happening on the floor of the museum or the aquarium, we needed to give those staff the confidence that they're going to have a productive conversation and not, you know, get punched in the face by a perfect stranger. Because that's scary and it's hard when your job is to actually provide positive experiences. You don't want to open your mouth and start a potentially negative experience. So we commissioned our partners at Frameworks Institute. They are a think tank based in DC that does social science research. And we had them look at what kind of deeply held American values were the ones that most likely queued up conversations on that were productive. And when we say productive, we mean they're positive, and they lead somebody to be able to think about multiple solutions. So not just regurgitate what we're telling them, but think through the mechanism and potential options for solutions. And we wanted those solutions to be at the policy level. So that was kind of another filter. And what we learned is that there are two values that most Americans or people who live in America because of our culture can connect with. And if we can cue those at the beginning of any conversation, it's really helpful. So the first one is this idea of protection, or the idea that we all care about protecting the people and places we love. And if we can cue up a conversation from that frame, it sets us up in a great way. And then the second one is the idea of responsible management. So the idea that taking practical steps now before the problem gets worse is the right thing to do. The idea that we need to take action now to protect future generations. Those ideas resonate really strongly and work well to get people to think through policy.
That's really helpful. Thank you.
Yeah.
So I understand that at Nokē, you urge climate communicators to move away from talking so much about the effects of climate change. So why, and can you give us an example of how you do that?
It's not necessarily that we're moving away from talking so much about the effects. There's kind of two things going on in a lot of climate communication in the media and kind of how we think about it. One is that we skip straight to the impacts. And so without, and kind of take for granted the knowledge that we have about what is causing climate change, that kind of mechanism. And what we're seeing is the lack of knowledge about the mechanism of climate change actually disempowers people. So if they don't know what the mechanism is, how can they think through and trust the solution you're providing? And so we just want to make sure that there's always kind of a part of, we call it the climate story or climate conversation, where you're taking 30 seconds to address the basic mechanism. And then linking it to an impact. The kind of other thing that we, that's kind of part of this recommendation, is to not go down a laundry list of impacts. That can be, it's like so easy because climate change affects everything and you just want to be like, and the seas are rising and the heat is happening and all this stuff. But that can get very overwhelming. It can help somebody feel really small in the face of this great change and kind of throw their hands up and say, well, what can I even do about this? So we all can make choices in our communication, and often what we do is really think through, like, to one impact that helps right now just so that it feels manageable and is focused. So that's kind of, it's not that you don't talk about the effects, it's that you kind of succinctly talk about the mechanism and an effect so that you can spend most of your conversation on the solutions and what we can do about it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, a lot. Thank you. And you talked about people needing to understand the mechanism of climate change. How do you connect that to a single effect? Can you give us an example?
Yeah, sure. So we had our, so, you know, the other thing that happens when you think about, like, oh, I've got to explain what climate change is, you could go into an hour, like, lecture on all the different things and all the graphs and all the different effects and the albedo and all of that stuff. But reality is most Americans just need enough, like, a frame to about information to hang their the rest of the incoming information. That doesn't make sense. But what I'm saying is that the way we process information in our brains is that we filter it through something that we already know. So we want to cue that up. And so, again, we went to frameworks and we said, we've got 2 minutes. How do we tackle the mechanism of climate change in a way that the most number of people can understand it so that we can then have a good conversation? And so they did some research and they looked at how scientists think about climate change. They looked at how the American public thinks about climate change. And then they saw that gap, and then they started testing a whole bunch of communication tools to kind of figure out which ones were the best for filling that gap of information. And the result has been, specifically on mechanisms, we have a couple of metaphors that are succinct, and they have enough meat on them to help people think through to solutions. They're memorable enough that once you hear them, you can repeat it to others, so you can talk to friends and family. And that they also are memorable enough that you can remember them in the future. So as new bills come down, as new solutions happen, or the news happens, you can process whether or not that's an appropriate solution. So the easiest one to use, and the one that we use the most, and the one that I would say, if you're talking and you go and you're like naturally about to say greenhouse gases, I would use this metaphor instead. And it's called the heat trapping blanket metaphor. So essentially it goes like this. When we burn fossil fuels like coal, oil, and natural gas, we release excess carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. In our atmosphere, carbon dioxide acts like a heat trapping blanket, trapping in the world's heat. And as we keep thickening this blanket, we are disrupting Earth's natural systems. For example, this excess heat is causing the oceans to warm, and warmer water expands from Boston and around the globe. We are experiencing sea level rise from the warmer waters. But the good news is we have the tools we need to help reduce our use of fossil fuels and bring the balance back. So that's quick, but enough to help people then process the next part of the conversation.
Nice, thank you, yeah. So, and when you're raising a potential solution to your audiences, as you get to the end of that metaphor, how do you invite people to participate?
Yeah, so this is like the best part of the conversation, right? This is the action, this is what you want to be talking about. This is the part of the conversation that builds hope and efficacy. And so after about 7 years, we commissioned frameworks of kind of doing this. We commissioned frameworks to really look at solutions, because we went from 10 years ago, it was hard to even find solutions. And so we were just name dropping them in there, and it didn't feel like super useful all the time. Or then we would be sharing solutions from across the country, and we were wondering if that was super effective. And so they started this research in the end of 2016. And the beginning of 2017, and they found that sometimes the solutions themselves can be polarizing, which is frustrating because we've done all of this work to depolarize the conversation, and you don't want to end up in sticky territory. So they came up with some solid recommendations that will help you kind of stay on track even with the toughest solution. So there's a couple of points to remember. So one, this is a place to reinforce that concern about climate is normal. So with the polarization that's been happening on this topic, there's a lot of false norming. Most people feel that they're in the minority by feeling concerned about climate, when reality, it's like 70% of the country is concerned. And so it's really important that we help people feel less alone and connected. It's a great time to reinforce the values, either the idea of responsible management or protection when bringing up your solution, kind of reminding people why it matters and connecting that back is really helpful. And then connecting the dots. So how does the solution address the problem? If the dots are connected and people can feel like it does address the problem, they're more likely to support it. So it may take a little bit more time. It's kind of the same as like explaining the mechanism. You just want to take the time to kind of, I like think about it like a little bit of like Hansel and Gretel and like leaving breadcrumbs for people, making sure that they can follow it. Because if there is a place that's unclear, they'll fill that in with their own knowledge, which might be very wrong from what you're thinking. And then the last two are invite people to join others. So there's so many communications that we hear like, okay, so now that you know about climate, go home, do your research, learn more about it. Do this thing in isolation. We're essentially telling people to like self-climate on their own. And that is not helpful because people don't have a lot of time. And isolation on this topic is really risky. We can't risk overwhelming people or disengaging them from feeling too small. So my go-to is really to point to groups that are in their area, in their towns, in their states that they can join, because that way they can plug in their special talents, their limited time. A community tends to work on bigger things, which helps build people's hopes and efficacy. A community or group has the social structures that help relieve some of those mental health issues, giving people more hope, more resilience, and it builds that social cohesion that we know is important. And then the final point is that we just want people to talk to others about climate. It is just as important as us reducing our energy, either by becoming more efficient or switching over to renewable. We can't create legislation, and I think you guys know this, this is why you do what you do, but we can't change policy if people aren't talking about it. So helping people feel like you don't have to be an expert to talk to your friends and family. Your friends and family are probably concerned too. Just kind of share your feelings and see where you're at. That's what we've learned.
I'm so glad you're sharing what you've learned. The thought and research that has gone into this is just incredible. I think we're all pretty interested in the values that you talked about, and you know, protection and responsible management. How do you actually do that? If you could give us an example of how you incorporate that into solutions or your next steps.
Sure. I'm going to share my screen because I can say it out loud, but I know for me, I'm a visual learner, and having the opportunity to just kind of read it would be really useful. Can everybody see this?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I now need to.
Except for the people on the phone, but everybody else.
Yeah, well, we'll read it out loud. Let me just move things away so I can read it too. So this looks like a lot of text. I will fully acknowledge that. And it's not quite a conversation, but it is a statement that has the value of protection kind of woven throughout. It has the mechanism, and it has an example of how I would talk about Citizens Climate Lobby as a solution. So here we go. When I talk to my neighbors, we often end up talking about our neighborhood where we live. We're all interested in making sure that the places we love and the people around us are safe. One of the challenges we're facing is that we're seeing a lot more flooding where I live. When we burn fossil fuels like coal, oil, and natural gas, we release excess carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. In our atmosphere, carbon dioxide acts like a heat-trapping blanket, trapping in the world's heat. This excess carbon dioxide thickens the blanket, disrupting Earth's natural systems. For example, this increased heat is causing the ocean to warm, and warmer water expands. So in Boston, we are experiencing sea level rise from the warmer waters. And so now the high tides are higher and regularly have been breaching certain roads and pathways. The good news is we have the tools we need to help reduce our use of fossil fuels and limit the flooding in our neighborhoods. Concerns about this are normal, and it's important that we start talking to each other about it so that we can actively eliminate and reduce risk to our neighborhood. A few of my neighbors are members of this group, Citizens Climate Lobby. Their local chapter comes together to talk with friends, neighbors, and local civic leaders about the need for national climate action. They're using their voices to build national bipartisan support for effective climate action. They're currently focused on a bill that's gaining traction that would reduce our heat-trapping gas emissions by 40% in 12 years and add 2.1 million jobs. What they tell me they enjoy about being part of this group is that they feel like their small part can have a big impact on our abilities to bring our systems back in balance, and that by joining a group, they don't feel so alone. So I would recommend looking into them if you're feeling like you don't know where to start. So that was a mouthful. But so for here, in kind of thinking about the protection value, again, it's the idea that we need to protect the people and places we love, that we need to safeguard, eliminate risks, or reduce risks. So kind of right up front, the second sentence, we're all interested in making sure the places that we love and the people around us are safe, is a direct cue to the protection value. Also, in the kind of second paragraph, that end of that first sentence is also a direct cue, so it's how you're bringing the protection idea, reintroducing it as you start to think about the solutions. Does that make sense? Anybody have any other questions or want to look? I have lost the chat box because I'm sharing my screen, but I'm happy to chat a little bit more, or we can move on to the responsible management one.
How about if we save the questions and you go on to the responsible management one, and then with a little luck, we'll have time for a couple of questions. Our folks are loving this in the chat. I've been able to see that.
Great. For the sake of showing the difference between the two values, these examples are very similar with the exception of the values. So I'll read this one again, and I apologize because a lot of it is the same. So when I talk to my neighbors, we often end up talking about the neighborhood where we live. We agree that it is best to take practical steps today that address the challenges before they get worse. One of the challenges we're facing is that we're seeing a lot more flooding where I live. When we burn fossil fuels like coal, oil, and natural gas, we release excess carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. In our atmosphere, carbon dioxide acts like a heat trapping blanket, trapping in the world's heat. This excess carbon dioxide thickens the blanket, disrupting Earth's natural systems. For example, this increased heat is causing the oceans to warm, and warmer water expands. So in Boston, we are experiencing sea level rise from the warmer waters. And so now the high tides are higher and regularly have been breaching certain roads and pathways. The good news is we have the tools we need to help reduce our use of fossil fuels and limit the flooding before it gets out of control. Concerns about this are normal, and it's important that we start talking to each other about it because future generations depend on the decisions we make today. A few of my neighbors are members of this group, Citizens Climate Lobby. Their local chapter comes together to talk with friends, neighbors, and local civic leaders about the need for national climate action. They're using their voices to build national bipartisan support for effective climate action. We are currently focused on a bill that's gaining traction that would reduce our heat-trapping gas emissions by 40% in 12 years and add 2.1 million jobs. They tell me they enjoy being part of this group because their small part can have a big impact on our ability to bring our systems back in balance, and that by joining a group, they don't feel so alone. So I would recommend looking into them if you feel like you don't know where to start. So for here, the responsible management value, it's the idea that addressing challenges before they get worse is the right thing to do. There's a big focus on being practical and evidence-based so that you're not just going crazy and inventing new things, but really looking at kind of what the problem is and the steps that, like, that settles people down, that idea that we're being really practical. And the idea that future generations depend on the decisions we make today. That's a big component of the responsible management value. So that's also cued kind of in the second sentence and the end of the first sentence in the second paragraph.
Thank you so much. Wow. Our folks, like I said, are just eating this up and planning to save it. And I can tell they're planning to practice it and use it. We are just about out of time, Hannah. Ricky, is there maybe one theme or question you want to pick out from the many interactions in the chat for Hannah before we go on to other things?
Yeah, a couple of folks had messaged me with a question about, currently right now there's a lot of people at home, a lot of students at home, might be home for a while, and they may want to talk to their parents about climate change. Do you have any particular advice for them for, you know, how to communicate across generations about climate change?
Sure. Youth are actually really effective messengers. We see it in families all over the country, but we see it too at the aquarium when we use our teen volunteers. Like, people stay and listen to presentations by teen volunteers more than adult volunteers. And we're seeing what's happening with Greta. So I think just really being honest about kind of their feelings and their concerns and sharing kind of what they know is going on is important. There's a wonderful group called the Alliance of Climate Education, or ACE, that trains youth to have climate conversations, and they actually have this cool program where you can text and they can like give you pointers by text or like support. If you're thinking about having a conversation, they can give you ideas, and then you can like share how it went and they can give you more ideas, which I think is really an amazing service. So I would definitely look up ACE. Again, it's the Alliance for Climate Education. And then also using our resources, which I can share. I know we're almost out of time, but I did want to make sure people knew. I saw some things in the chat box about where people wanted to get the research and other things.
Thank you. And your slides will be available, and other things you share with us, we'll make sure that people have a way to access. I know that all of us across the who are listening on the call are just really heartened by knowing what you and your members are doing in the zoos and aquariums around the country, and we're and just feeling incredibly grateful for that. So thank you so much, Hannah.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. You are, of course, welcome to stay on for the rest of the call if you have time. I know that you have a lot of things you're figuring out, and it's a weekend, but we're very happy to have you stay on. Thank you so much.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Okay. So as you probably know, everybody, we're in the middle of our March fundraiser, and we only do this twice a year. But it turned out to be happening at a really difficult time. So I'm very, very grateful to Lene Pettengill and her extraordinary team for their heartfelt work raising money for CCL. And she has just a few words to say to you about our spring drive.
Hey, everyone. So I'm on a lot of lists for environmental and climate change groups, many of whom ask me to donate to them every few weeks. But here at CCL, we ask people to donate just twice a year. And this happens to be one of those times, as Madeline said. Today, though, I want you to know that you do enough for this organization, giving of your time and talent to this great work. So I ask you to please not feel guilty, not one little bit, if it does not make sense for you to donate at this time, okay? There will be some people who are able to become monthly Evergreen donors right now, and that is great and super helpful. So wherever you're at with this, thank you for all that you do for CCL and for your deep commitment to livable climate for generations to come. So all of you take good care, keep washing those hands, making smart decisions about when and where to gather, and never forget that we're all in this together, and we are a powerful, effective force for good. Back to you, Madeline.
Thank you, Lene. Really appreciate that. So I know that a lot of you are wondering about the June National Conference. We continue to monitor the situation and are exploring our options. We will let you know, I'm imagining early in April, what is going on with that. And do know that if it turns out we have to cancel it, that all registrations will be refunded. So you don't need to worry about that. Before I talk about the actions, I want to share something that I learned about while I was at the Northeast Regional Conference. Our New Hampshire CCL State Coordinator, John Gage, and his team, they joined up with volunteers from other local climate and energy groups and formed the Carbon Cashback Coalition. I just have to say that twice, the Carbon Cashback Coalition. And its purpose is to organize support simultaneously for both state and federal carbon fee and dividend legislation. So that is a really nice innovation. They created a resolution and they're taking it to dozens of annual town hall meetings that are held in their state for a vote by the townspeople. They have people working on that in 82 towns so far, and it's growing. 82, wow. And 24 towns have already voted and 19 of them passed it. And it's also getting like a huge amount of press coverage in the towns and on the New Hampshire media. So all the state and federal legislators, their members of Congress and their state people, they're all very aware of the widespread discussion that carbon fee and dividend is getting and this movement is growing. People from all over New Hampshire are talking about the carbon cashback program that we know as carbon fee and dividend. So I just have to say congratulations, New Hampshire. Thank you. We also have something new for you. We like to say that our solution to climate change is democracy. And so we're working on a new way to enact that this election year by teaming up with TurboVote. And the idea is to enable you to provide people with an easy way to register to vote. So TurboVote is a website that it's set up to help people register in every state. So in 40 states, you can, through TurboVote, you can link to your state online registration setup. In 10 states that don't have it, they will link you to information about the process and the forms that you need to make that easier. So this is something we thought you might be able to do at your Earth Day tabling. We're not sure you're going to be doing it there, but you can share that link everywhere you can once we have it up, which should be about the end of March. But once that's out there, you can share that from now till the end of the elections to help people participate by voting. I also want to say on that theme about voting that we're really excited that we're going to have Nathaniel Stinnett of the Environmental Voter Project back as a national call speaker next month for April. People really loved what he said the last time he was on 2 years ago, and it'll be great to hear what's up with them now. Okay, so this is the part where I would normally talk about the actions for the month, but nothing's normal right now. So every day this week, you know, it's brought us to a new, a little higher state of alarm or a lot higher state of alarm about the virus. And so I'm really not sure how appropriate that action sheet is anymore right at this moment. Now, obviously, I remain convinced that staying in action is important. It's just that so many of us are right at the moment having to let go of a lot of plans we made. Really excellent plans for Earth Day and presentations and meetings and other things. And we're having to reinvent ourselves as virtually connected human beings instead of face-to-face. And, you know, we don't know if that's weeks or months. And then we're having to do all that while not being too scared for ourselves and for the people we love and for each other. So I do want to say that our advice to you and really our request that Mark and I have of you is that you stop meeting face-to-face from this point forward or doing the face-to-face presentations or those things until we're past this thing. And I could say this in a lot of ways, but it boils down to we're asking that because we love you and your health and your community's health matter more than the plans you made. All of our plans we're letting go of, that's not as important as your health. So toss the action sheet if you need to and start fresh. Okay. What can your group do in this period while staying safe? You're creative, smart, and determined people, and we have lots of technology to help us. One group leader told me yesterday that her chapter decided last week already to stop meeting and committed instead to dividing up their roster and calling everyone on it to encourage them to sign up for our monthly calling Congress campaign. And there's other actions that are in the new COVID-19 forum that we started on community. Just like you have a forum for the bill to share your thoughts and questions and activities, we wanted there to be one for this period of time focused on COVID-19 so that you can ask things there and share how you're handling the situation. So please make use of it and use your time today to talk about the things you can do to stay connected and to stay in action. So staff are hard at work exploring other ideas as well. One thing we're discussing is creating an online CCL Earth Day celebration that you could bring people to virtually, of course. So stay tuned. So lastly, I'm going to end with some words that were sent to me by a member of my church choir as we were sadly giving up the chance to sing together tomorrow. It's from a post by Rabbi Yosef Konevsky, on his Facebook page for his Los Angeles congregation. And it's partially quoted in the Washington Post. One of the brand new terms, he wrote, that has entered our daily conversation is social distancing. It is shorthand, as we know very well, for the practical physical precautions that we all need to and must take in order to protect ourselves and others. I'd humbly suggest, though, that we use the term itself sparingly, if at all. Language is a powerful shaper of thinking. And the very last thing we need right now is a mindset of mutual distancing. We actually need to be thinking in the exact opposite way. Every hand that we don't shake must become a phone call that we place. Every embrace that we avoid must become a verbal expression of warmth and concern. Every inch and every foot that we physically place between ourselves and another must become a thought as to how we might be of help to that other should the need arise. It's obvious that distancing, if misplaced or misunderstood, will take its toll not only upon our community's strength and resiliency, but upon the very integrity and meaning of our spiritual commitment. So he concluded by saying, "Let's stay safe, and let's draw one another closer in a way that we have never done before." So, CCLers, I know that you can do this. And that's our call for today. We can't show you to each other, but there are a lot of you there, and you can know that, and you can stay connected and visual with each other and in touch with us. And yes, we love you. Bye.
And you can chat happy birthday to Madeline in the chat too if you want.